when they confront the dolphins, the British
dolphins... It's not a dolphin, it's a whale! We just said that!
My bad. Captain's Pod, Stardate 1711-54.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief short leap from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, all she wants for her birthday is blood, wine, and pain sticks. It's Ambassador Danae.
How did you feel about last week's noise that I made while you did the intro?
Shit. When I do the episode, when I start the editing, I have my headphones on, because I can get a really detailed listen to like whether the levels are correct or not. And then I'll listen to the rest of it just through my speakers. That was the wrong time to be listening through my headphones. It was deafening. And if anybody wants to experience that, it's in the outtakes. Just know that I turned it down for the listener. You'll never experience what I did.
That was the most obnoxious I've ever done. Because I didn't realize that you turned me down completely and you couldn't hear at all. I thought you were powering through, and I was very entertained by that.
Impossible to power through that. This board is a gift because I can just turn you down. But no. Only when you know. I don't agree with what Danae is saying here. I'm just going to turn her down. No, I would totally use that power like that.
Yeah. Well, my pain stick is just my voice. So sorry about that.
How many pain sticks do you think you could take? Because you have to go through, like, I think it's 10 levels, and they get gradually more painful.
Right, to the point of death.
In theory, although TNG isn't, they don't explicitly say that, but Lower Decks certainly
did. But they did in Lower Decks, yeah. I think I could probably get to about 8.
I love that because I haven't given you any specifications about, like, what the level of pain is, because I don't know what. I guess it could follow the actual pain scale, because that's the thing, isn't it? Like, give me a between 1 and 10. How much pain are you feeling? And that's roughly more accurate than you'd think it would be.
I mean, that's still based on the person's version of what their 1 in 10 is.
Yeah, that's true.
Is there a universal way to gauge pain? I think that there have been attempts at pain stuff where...
It just feels unethical, doesn't it?
Like, people will hook up to those little electrode machines and then they will mimic childbirth, and they'll put those pads on men's abdomen so they can kind of feel what a cramp potentially feels like.
But I don't know, that's even close.
I don't know how they, I guess they could put on a woman and woman's like, yep, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
But those videos are interesting to me. And so because of that, that's why I'm confident I can get to an 8, because I've watched the men fall and falter while the woman is hooked up to the same machine with the same electrodes and she's just sitting there reading a book, because that's just our life.
Yeah. I mean, I will confidently say 2.
Yeah. Level I think 2. Maybe you could
and
go
I think
2.
Level 2 is like a stubbed toe. And I'm like, you know what? I'm out. Because when I get hurt, I get so angry. Like, I am annoyed. When something has hurt me, even if it's like an inanimate object, I take it personally. And I'm like, how dare you inflict pain upon me? And I get so irritated and just walk away.
Didn't you want to listen to some emails or something?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of painful things, I don't know.
That's a bad segue.
Let's head over to wherever we do emails, which I think is the Observation Lounge, for a couple of listener predictions. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time to read your predictions from Discord, Twitch, and, well, email. I've had to change that up, and I'm not sold on it yet. First, we have... So last week, we asked for some of your predictions for the rest of the season. Our first email comes from BadgieCon Badge, and I'll read their email in its entirety. Run program, virus, download complete. Great. Thank you for giving me a heart attack on my work email.
That's such a badgy thing to do.
It so is. It's a beautifully trolly thing to do. Captain, my predictions for this season are, and the rifts that I may or may not have created. Oh, you cheeky sausage badgy. We will get an ISS Cerritos as well as an animated galaxy class, which is the Enterprise D, Picard's Enterprise, in the show. Virus run goodbye. So that kind of links back to Discovery, where we had the ISS Enterprise, which was an Enterprise from the Mirror Universe, and it's all evil and stuff. So Badgie predicts we're going to get an evil version of the Cerritos and Captain Picard's specifically style of Enterprise. How cool would that be to see our Enterprise animated in Lower Deck style? Because I think that's the only legacy ship from like that era that we haven't seen, because we saw Deep Space Nine, we've seen Voyager, we haven't seen the Enterprise D.
Yeah. I wonder if there is any chance that the animators from this show would just release their version of it, just like a 10-second clip of something happening, you know, because we're not going to see all of our most desired things, but it would be neat if they did a series where they did do them.
This show could have 10 seasons. It really, really, it's not, 5 seasons isn't enough time. The more I think about it, the more I'm just like, even if we do something new after this, why can't we just continue Lower Decks? It's such a great nostalgia bed, but there we go. Love those predictions. We have another email from David. I think it's the first time emailing. Hi guys, first I wanted to say I love the podcast and listen every Wednesday morning on my way to work. Yay! Thank you, David.
Boo work!
Yeah, boo
unless
work.
Unless you love it.
Also,
I
think this is our third David in some form or another. We seem to be collecting Davids.
Davids are great.
Yeah. Davids get badges. To my prediction. Since the show is on Paramount Plus, my theory connects to another Paramount Plus Star Trek TV show, that being Picard. Season two of Picard. A season of a show I wish I could forget. Us too. That was the one where they went back in time to Earth for the whole season. A season of a show I wish I could forget begins and ends with a rift being opened in space and being protected by the happy Borg Queen Agnes. Season 3 didn't even mention this rift at all. With no known plans to continue that storyline, we may never know what it is. What if the Picard rift and these rifts are connected and we can finally find out what the point was for that rift to exist in the first place? It would be random, but strangely perfect for Lower Decks. So this is the giant space vulva thing that opens up Picard season 2 and it deactivates like all of the Starfleet ships, and then season 2 ends with Agnes leading the Borg and protecting all of the ships through the rift. But we never get told what opened that rift to begin with that meant Agnes had to protect it, so, or protect them from what's coming in. So it would be cool to tie up that loose end, I agree. Because season 3 was just like, season 2 didn't happen.
It's a space gynecologist.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Like, just opening up vulvas everywhere.
Just opening up space rifts to figure out why. We'll stop opening them then. Yeah. Do you have any memory of Picard season 2? I'm always interested to see what you retain.
I remember 7 of 9 driving a car arguing with his arguing with her girlfriend.
Yeah, huh? That, yeah.
I remember a guy, I think he stayed back because he fell in love, but he was a great pilot and it was a waste of his character.
Rios.
Yes.
Yep, and he died in a bar fight.
Did he?
Yeah, they killed him off in the last episode because Picard's like, I wonder what happened to Rios. And I think Guinan is like, he died in a bar fight, but it was fighting honorably. And I'm like, wow, fuck you. That's a shitty way to kill Rios. Yeah, we did not like season 2.
Really bad.
Uh-huh.
That might be... Oh, I think there was a kid. There was a clinic.
Yes. Yep.
There was something to tie into the riots. There's some kind of like base that they had to get to that was maybe tied into some timeline of riots of some kind historically.
Yeah, the Bell riots. That definitely pops up because I think that's the year they travel back to.
But I have no memory of what Picard was doing the entire time.
I mean, that's fair.
Do you?
He was talking to Guinan and then he talked to Q. He found his great-great-great-grandmother, who was an astronaut, and had to convince her of going on a mission that she'd backed out of.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Q hugs him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, right, because there was some Mars thing happening.
Yeah, there was a Mars launch that had to happen, and that was the point in history that changed.
What a weird time
was. It's incredible. We spent 10 weeks talking about it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, with that, it would be nice to have something pleasant to remember about season 2 of Picard. So hopefully that prediction comes true. Well, Ambassador, this week's episode is Starbase 80 question mark. Our personal predictions for this from last week were, you believe that our Freeman wants to know why her alternate Freeman has been banished to Starbase 80. So she takes the Cerritos to go and investigate what is happening. Ian thinks that it's the Freeman that's on Starbase 80, the evil one, that is creating a load of different portals because she's trying to get herself to a universe where she isn't in prison and take the place of a different Freeman. It'd be very, very in keeping with Mirror Universe shenanigans.
I'm just curious what the question mark is.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people have questions about Starbase 80. So kind of a brave thing to do. I'm curious what they're going to do with it. Yeah. I am a little nervous too because I haven't enjoyed the last couple of episodes as much.
So. Yeah, I'm hoping for a home run on this one. I really, really am. To that point, one of our lovely listeners went to a Star Trek convention and let us know that during one of the panels, Tawny Newsome, who plays Mariner, said that they actually didn't know that this was going to be the end and were only allowed to rewrite and re-record the final episode of the season. So I think that helps with some context going forward that these episodes were the episodes that were going to happen, and it's just episode 10 that is going to be fundamentally different from what they planned. I don't like it, Danae. I like series to know that they're going to end.
I do too, and I think it's a disservice to the. I think it's a disservice to the creators. I understand that there's budget things to consider. You know, maybe a character couldn't return because a voice actor wasn't available, but it's hard for me to understand that world because I've never done it before. There has to be so many more details to consider that I can't comprehend the complexity of putting on a production of this size. I can kind of take a stab at it, but I still hate it. I hate that they don't give them time to do a story, a service, because the fans are the ones that suffer because of it. Now, am I going to enjoy whatever I see? Sure, to a certain degree I am, but when you're saying we're not releasing any more of the series, you're fireflying me in a way, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And it just, it leaves a sour taste in your mouth. No, again, but it does like lift up the show to some sort of epic godlike level for fans because there is nothing better than Firefly. You know, that kind of feel.
If Firefly had got another season and it was a bit shit, no one would really talk about Firefly. It's become this mythical creature in sci-fi culture.
It was a great show. I really enjoyed it.
It was incredible. It was so great. Yes, less things should be Firefly'd, more things should be Star Trek TNG'd, but there we go. Money sucks.
Like, we don't want it to get to Lost levels where it's just like, okay, guys, just...
Well, Lost, I mean, that's a whole other discussion. Lost could have been great had we liked what they did with the ending, but we didn't.
But it didn't feel like... It felt like, oh, we got renewed, so what are we going to do this season? Instead of having an understanding of where it was going. It had that feel. That's my point. So
no,
there's a difference between, like, let's think of, what's a great show that had a purpose?
Star Trek.
The Good Place.
Oh, perfect example. Yes.
So they knew where they were going, and they had a beginning, middle, and end, and they followed their story, and then it was over, and it was a great story. Like, yeah. I like that. Now, episodical kind of environments, I guess, are a little different. Mm-hmm. But we are talking about the story arc of characters that we like. So I just...
Boop, boop. Yeah, I get it. It shouldn't be decided by money, and yet it is. It should always be creatively.
Everything's decided by money.
Yeah, it should be creatively what makes sense for these people, and this does
this
feel
too
short.
This is a great time to probably mention that if you want to support our show...
go to the Sing Club and join our Patreon.
Yeah. And mention that you're here just for Captain Spot.
That would be great, just specifically. Yeah, all of our money should go to Captain Spot.
We're gonna.
Well, with that, let's head over to 10
my,
forward.
My PayPal is. my
give
Venmo
out your
is.
Specific PayPal, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's head over to the holodeck to finally find out what the heck is going on Starbase 80. Two to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched.
I hated it! Oh, just kidding, sorry.
Most important question first. Did you hate it? No. What do you want from the replicator?
A corn dog.
You can have your corn dog. I'm going to get me some decontamination gel, if you know what I mean.
Gross.
Yeah, I'm going to slather that decontamination gel everywhere. Yeah.
It didn't seem to have any negative side effects, though.
No, I was convinced that the gel was going to be the thing, but it really didn't have negative side effects. And
that we know of yet.
I'm glad that it got a shout out, though, because it's notorious.
It's a thing?
Oh,
that's a thing?
It exists in Star Trek. It's a thing. We'll get to it. Give us a synopsis of this week's episode. !
Mariner returns to Starbase 80, this place that we've been thinking about and wondering about for a long time. And then we go there and we discover that this Starbase is scary for many, many, many reasons. Mm-hmm. And the newest reason is something that the Cerritos has brought to Starbase 80. Some sort of weird creature that is infecting communication badges and technology and porpoises.
Whales? Dolphins?
Aren't they a porpoise?
Well, what's her name? This is a great start. Cassia Knox. Cassia Knox says that they're whales, but I always thought they were dolphins.
I didn't think they were whales. Maybe they're not porpoises. No, they're not porpoises. There's a difference between porpoises.
Did you just Google a porpoise?
Dolphins. Yes, because I couldn't remember. I just recently send something where I had to know this, and I remember being like, educated, and then I unlearned myself. So are they whales or are they dolphins?
I'm being reliably informed by our producer, aka the live chat, that they are beluga whales specifically.
Oh, of course. Okay, yes, makes sense.
Beluga whales.
Yeah, because the beluga whale has the big, like, bulbous forehead kind of thing.
Yeah, with a kind of more stunted nose, yeah.
Right, okay. So anyway, this entity has possessed the beluga whale, and we are excited for it because we get to see zombies this episode, reminiscent of like the first episode, I think, that I ever watched of this show.
I was getting a lot of episode one flashbacks where the crew of the Cerritos get zombified, yeah.
But yeah, this is an episode that is taking Mariner on the journey of reconciling with yet another thing that she needs to come face to face with, which is that her hatred of Starbase 80 needs to have some sort of resolution. And that is why this episode exists.
A big old redemptive arc for rumors and bad reputations and stuff like that. Ambassador, after a couple of admittedly rough episodes that we've had mixed feelings about. Was this a return to form? Did you enjoy this week?
Yes, I enjoyed this episode.
Yay!
I thought it was paced nicely. It was a fun little, you know, adventure to follow, a mystery to solve, and it worked for me. What about you? Did you like it?
Yeah, me too. You could say it's a pretty superficial episode, but I'm kind of glad we had that. I had a really great time with it. It's a fun, just adventure. It kind of reminds me of Genesis, which is the weird episode of TNG where they all de-evolve, and it's like it's the Data and Picard come back to the Enterprise, and Riker's turned into a caveman, Deanna has turned into a fish, and it just kind of reminded me of that, like, kind of fun throwaway episode that's a fun ride, good jokes, lots of references. I had some laugh out loud moments that were really funny. Like, I think the show does physical comedy so freaking well, and the voice acting is always great.
A cartoon.
For being like physical comedy in a cartoon, you'd think it's either going to be really easy or really hard. Either way, they nail it. And yeah, I had so much fun with this episode. Throw out some of your highlights for me.
Well, I can't go any further because our producer / chat, which would be a combination of Phil and Lodair, are talking about how the creature is the same creature as the sex candle.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I was going to get to this. At the very end of the episode, when they confront the dolphins, the British doctor is like, it's not a dolphin, it's a whale.
We just said that.
My bad. The British doctor is like, the beluga whales, whatever. They've been possessed by an anaphasic life form. And the anaphasic life form is the green life form energy being that inhabits Beverly's candle. So as soon as he said anaphasic, all of the pieces came together. And I was like, of course it's green. Why didn't I see that sooner? So yeah, this is another sex candle ghost that is fucking with inanimate objects to mess with people. Does that reformat the episode for you in your brain?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how this... Okay. So the creature of this episode is the same kind, or it's like a junior version that hasn't, it's trying to like show its ability.
Yeah, it's the same species. Yeah, not the same specific ghost.
Correct.
It may not even be the same race, but it's the same type of being. Like, we're carbon-based.
Oh.
It's anaphasic energy-based.
But the candle episode, now I'm back in that one, and Lower Decks has entirely disappeared for me. So of course.
Didn't he light the candle? Let me see.
Like, I have to figure out how to get my brain to stop thinking about that episode, because in that one, Beverly has to go back home for some kind of an event, right? And
for the death of her grandma. Yeah, her nana. Right.
And so she essentially inherits this ghost.
Yes.
That has been sexually assaulting her family for generations.
Yeah, actually, yes. Yes.
Right.
Sexually manipulating them. Yeah.
But, God, I have to stop thinking about this, but I'm trying to remember, because now I'm thinking, like, yeah, if this creature in this episode is the same kind of creature.
Yeah.
You're going to have to give me a second here.
This is amazing. I'm so glad we've seen this episode.
The green ghost, the candle ghost.
Yeah.
What was it trying to accomplish? Was it trying to possess her to live out its life?
If I remember rightly, it was getting energy from her genetics. So her family line had something specific that this life form needed, which is why it couldn't latch on to any old person. It specifically was latching on to all of the women in Crusher's family, or the Howard family line, going from woman to woman. And it was how it was staying alive and sustaining itself.
So it was trying to take something, but it needed her to survive. Like,
yeah.
Beverly needed to live, but she was essentially trading off part of her existence for it to continue on. I can't remember.
Well, in return, they get it's so misogynistic, but on the one side, they get a man to look after them for the rest of their lives. And they have like companionship, but also they had like quite long life as well. So there's a history of them living to a very old age and living a very healthy life and kind of being rejuvenated in exchange. So it's a symbiotic, parasitic, non-willing, coercive exchange.
But because that particular ghost guy was not being honest with her about its intentions.
Hell no.
And it took the form of a man, or it was
the physical form of a man. Yeah, when it needed to, but it took a lot of energy to hold that physical form. It couldn't stay like that, so it had to use the candle as
a little resting spot,
as Odo's goo pot. It's the same thing.
Okay. So she lights the candle, activates the dude tries to take her over, she gets out of that.
Yes.
And that is the same kind of creature that is in this one. And its purpose in this one, if I'm understanding correctly, mm-hmm, is not companionship, but just dominating everybody it possibly can.
No.
Spread itself too thin.
Are you talking about the one in Lower Decks?
Yes.
No. So this one, it wanted to prove a point to its superiors that communicating with humans and other physical life forms was possible. So it was trying to prove a point that communication was possible with physical beings. So it tapped into the Cerritos, it found the comm badges, and then spread. Marin said it was reaching out its tentacles and fingertips and tongue tips and whatever to try and communicate with people. But it was just fucking it up because it's not familiar with organic life, is how I was understanding it.
Okay. And that's why I needed to stop and think about this, because
what's the correlation between the two?
The intent of this one was very briefly tainted by the intent of the candle one. And I'm like, what?
Tainted. What a choice of words.
What are we doing here?
It's as soon as you mention anaphasic, like I'm fortunate that I listen to anything else after that, because every Star Trek fan essentially is like, sex candle, anaphasic energy.
I remember when you were so hesitant to have me watch that episode, I hate it.
To this day, it is the one I was most nervous about, mainly because of the uncomfortable sexualness. Like, not because I'm uncomfortable watching sexual things, but because it's a very problematic episode in terms of consent, is what I'll say. Like, Beverly doesn't consent to the sexing that happens, although it very much appears that she enjoys it, which is problematic. So I was, like, really nervous about, like, man, this has not... I don't know that this is aged well.
Yeah. I remember it being like, this is, like, there's part of it that's obviously not okay, but the episode itself was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's really interesting to bring in this anaphasic life form and to give it new life and to give it meaning beyond the sex scandal episode. Like, that's something that Lower Decks does really well, is to take the cliches, the Star Trek tropes, the stuff that might be uncomfortable and hasn't aged well, and give it alternate life and new life. Like, and it's done this with so many different things, and it's like the real redemption here is for the anaphasic being, not just Starbase 80.
Right.
Whether that was intentional or not, or me reading into it, but that's what I read into the episode.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. What a great place to start. Like, that episode, the sex scandal episode, is the literal definition of a guilty pleasure. And this episode is, I don't know, maybe, like you said, a redemptive arc for that particular alien species.
It's okay to like that episode because there's something beyond the sex scandal alien. Like, there's something that species exists and does things beyond that. I love Lower Decks as a vessel for doing that. One last point on the sex scandal stuff before we move on. The live chat came up with this, like, separate people mentioned this from different channels, and it's a genius thing that I hadn't considered, but this anaphasic life form is a lower decker of its own people because it's a low rank trying to prove to its superiors something. So they met the lower decker of anaphasic life forms. Again, I hope that's deliberate, but that's a really clever little story turn, if deliberate, which I'm going to say it was.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think that this episode was a nice thing to do because we're solving a couple of different mysteries, but the big one is, like, what is Starbase 80 really like? And yeah, I think, I don't know. I thought I liked it. The now that I'm kind of coming back into the episode and I'm not as distracted by the correlation with the other entity from TNG, I need to reset my brain and then go back into the episode. So where do you want to start?
Well,
continue rather.
We are, so the Cerritos drops out of warp, the beluga whales can't see where they're going. Panic sets in when Starbase 80 is the closest place they can go. Mariner goes into a blind panic. So I think I'd like to start with the Starbase itself. So there are so, when you build up something like this from season one, like, there has been so many references to Starbase 80 being the butt of jokes. We get to go there briefly when Mariner is sent there as a punishment for, quote-unquote, betraying the ship. But how did Starbase 80 live up to your expectations? Like, was this... Are you happy with where this joke went? Did you want something more? What were you expecting going in? And did you like what Starbase 80 eventually became?
Yeah, I think I was satisfied with it. The zombie thing puts me into like a, oh, we're just doing something goofy. And so I was attempting to, like Tendi was saying, there's got to be a scientific reason for this. This isn't, we're not just seeing zombies. There's a reason for it. And of course there is a reason for it. But now that the show is over, this episode is over, you know, Mariner, there's a couple things that don't work for me. And one of them is that Mariner was basically saying this place is cursed, and we were distracted very strongly by the obvious zombie curse. Mm-hmm. But what was she actually talking about? You know, what when she was saying people just come here and they turn dumb, you know, we kind of forget that she had some kind of an actual reference for that. And it's convenient that this entity ended up making people do dumb things to the point of like licking walls and just sort of turning into a zombie. But So that kind of like was like, okay, well, what was she actually talking about? I mean, and maybe she was jaded because she was pissed off. So that was kind of a like, how convenient that her thing that she said happens to go off this way
with this separate thing that's happening on the Cerritos. Yeah. And I think it's like, it's mainly based on her interact. There was somebody she interacted with that was a bit stupid on Starbase 80.
The corn dog guy.
And I think that, like, there's, well, I don't think it was him, although he is, bless him. And there is this reputation that people go to Starbase 80 and they never come back. They're just like, that's where you go to die. So, yeah, but I agree. There's definitely some artificial amping it up. And then all of the clues, like a good tarot reading, are all there in front of you to interpret and to fit into your conspiracy once you're convinced that thing is cursed.
The second thing that didn't really work for me in this episode is the new Guinan character, the highly optimistic yet very sketch. She's so suspicious.
Cassia Nox. So suspicious, but isn't. Like, it's...
It doesn't go anywhere. No,
but I think that I think that's deliberate because we are, like, we are key to see this really nice, helpful, upbeat, bubbly person that is in this environment that shouldn't be bubbly. She is the Aaron Dicer of Starbase 80.
Oh,
and
God.
We are deeply suspicious of that. We're like, no, you can't just be happy with your situation. Yeah. There must be another boot that's going to drop here. And when it doesn't, I think that's playing on us being cynical mariners.
I don't know. Good on them for leaving a little bit of it in a ... way where I'm just kind of feeling a little uncomfortable because when she's at the very end, almost scooting them off of the ship, sort of got that feeling of, oh, you're staying?
Oh, there's and more? Just,
there's a sort of strain in the acting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's either something that was put in there purposefully by the director, the voice director, kind of giving, like, there's always this air about this person that they're like,
if this comes back around in the finale and she ends up being evil, this will be one of the greatest predictions you've ever made. Because I didn't get that. I totally was in the camp of, oh, I'm the asshole for assuming she's going to do something evil when she's actually just a nice person being optimistic. But if she ends up being evil, that would be incredible. I would love that.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was going to be the case for Shaw, and I was very wrong. So yes, I don't have a great track record, I suppose. Yep. But there was something about Mariner's turn. They're in the food court towards the, you know, the end, fighting off everyone, attempting to figure out what's really happening. The combat being the transference of this energy has been discovered, and they realize that if they're going to look at the source and figure this out, they have to be on the Cerritos, and they're going to go back and they're going to infiltrate. But at that moment, they're in the food court, and she is giving this optimistic speech about Starbase 80 being a place where redemptive stories happen. And Mariner is just swallowing it like it's a margarita. She's so happy to just consume this new vibe. And the episode itself telegraphs that Mariner is ready for change with the beginning, showing that she's
really,
you know,
spelling it out,
enjoying the mission instead of enjoying the subterfuge of the mission. So I am believing that she's growing and evolving as a character. But the Starbase 80 thing, when she's like, oh, this place is, it can be redemptive, it can be this, that's the moment that the writers are wanting us, the viewer, to jump on board with everything being okay. But we have just seen so many sketchy things happening on Starbase 80. And I have one kind of moment where the quote unquote gang, you know, gives tokens to the captain and Handsome when they're going off into the arcade. And that's sort of like, see, these characters are okay. They just look really sketchy, but then they're actually
that's
good.
That's the juxtaposition. Yeah.
I think what's interesting is that, because your question's like about Starbase 80, does it work for you? I am really curious about Starbase 80. And because the zombie thing took over so much of Starbase 80, I kind of want to spend some time stripping the mystery of what's happening with the Cerritos crew away, because you really don't have a confident look at the Starbase with that happening at the same time. It's kind of an unfair red herring, so to speak.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Because to me, this Starbase is really interesting. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It obviously needs a lot of assistance. It has some really kooky characters. I would watch a show based on this instead of Deep Space Nine in a minute. You know, like, this is kind of a...
No!
Do you know what I mean?
Sacrilege.
Like, the people that are here, this half of the base is run by this, half of the base is run by that.
And having to deal with all of this old technology as well, and just dealing with the scraps that Starfleet sends you.
Yeah, and then you've got this, like, really crazy engineer guy who is just fucking with them the whole time. I saw it coming, but it was still really fun to watch him kind of lead them around the starbase going
wherever needed to be repaired.
Yes. And then they'd go and they'd repair it and move on. And I thought that worked for me. And that was really fun. And I love how this episode ends where the captain and Handsome are still like at, like they are trying to solve the fucking bat problem.
She has a great line at the very end, yeah, which is like, no giant bat is keeping me on this starbase. I was like, no, but it is. It's yeah, so great. It's so like that lack of self-awareness that Freeman has sometimes is so, so funny.
I think that Starbase 80, the setup on this one was really, really fun for me too. This idea that they don't even have replicators, they have food vendors. I've got a lot of questions about that, mm-hmm, but whatever.
They don't have comm badges. They have to use the wall communications mm-hmm panels.
Yep. Their lifts have the turn and talk.
Love that.
They're the kooky things where you turn the corner and engineering is upside down. It would give such a fun space to do a show when every single room is a trap that is designed to kill you, either because something nefarious is going on or because the Starbase is just falling apart and we're in space and we gotta make it work, you know?
Interestingly, you've just described the first season of Deep Space Nine, which is because the Cardassians know that Terok Nor, Deep Space Nine, is being handed over to Starfleet. So they sabotage everything. They destroy it. They leave bugs in the system. Like airlocks will randomly open. The replicators won't work. And most of the first season, it has lots of storylines where it's like, the Cardassians left this behind. We have to solve this problem. And O'Brien just like rolls his sleeves up like Mariner. And O'Brien's job is to fix all of these problems and to rebuild this station. It's great. It's great. It's the best part of season one is O'Brien trying to fix the Cardassian space station with chewing gum and sticky tape. Yeah.
I think I would like that very much. Those so maybe I should actually give it a watch at some point. I think it could be kind of fun. But I do like that. And maybe that was an intentional sort of wink and nod to Deep Space Nine. Is maybe it has that same vibe, because isn't Deep Space Nine also run by another organization? Isn't it shared?
It's half and half. Yeah. It's under Starfleet control, but it's owned by the Bajorans.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Bajorans have said, you can manage it so that the Cardassians or someone else doesn't come in and take advantage of us.
So it has that same kind of a vibe.
Yeah, that 50-50 split, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really great storyline to have for Star Trek, because you can be bombarded by Starfleet. You can be bombarded by Federation. So when you introduce another system of government or governing, I think it kind of gives an opportunity for a lot of stories to happen, because there could be, you know, internal conflict that happens, or just different ways of doing things.
They could have done it on Voyager as well, because Voyager ends up absorbing the McKee crew that they've chased. But Voyager kind of buries that, because they just incorporate the McKee crew into the crew. So like Chakotay is McKee, but he puts on the Starfleet uniform. Everybody just gets a Starfleet uniform and they carry on, and they don't do a huge amount with that split of having 50 extra crew that aren't, or however many that aren't Starfleet. That you're right, there are so many stories that can come out of that.
It also does something that I think was happening in, was it the final season of Picard, was it Strange New Worlds, that kind of went more into the Federation isn't always right territory. I mean,
name any modern Star Trek, but that is
It would be weird if it was Strange New Worlds, because it's modern Star Trek, but it's
would be a Picard thing. Season,
was it Picard? I feel like we just watched something where it was like, Discovery? What if maybe that was it?
Because they're rebuilding the Federation.
Yes.
And people are would we join your club instead of make our own?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a really interesting trend of the more modern storytelling archetype, which is to give the villain an understandable backstory to relate to, and to give the hero a dark element that reminds the viewer that there isn't always a black and white good versus bad. But we still like to see that happen. We still like to see a confidence of our direction in storytelling and in our lives in general. It's nice to kind of have a clear path instead of there being convoluted decisions to make that you like. It's paralyzing sometimes to kind of go, well, what's the right choice to make? Yeah. You know, so when you're watching those decisions easier, discovered a little bit easier or more clearly outlined in our entertainment, it's nice for our brains to have something to sort of go, oh, that was easy because that's clearly the bad guy, you know.
Unless you're presented with a good person that is clearly a good person and you still think they're the villain.
And this is the thing, is modern storytelling, they're not really giving us a lot of answers. Yeah. They're what they're really doing, this particular episode, is they're just giving us something interesting to watch and then letting it be what it is. And I really do appreciate that because, you know, you've got this entity that's really messing with people. Like, how many are going to be really ill? They all licked walls, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's gross.
Boimler was licking an old, old Starbase wall. Yeah. Like, he's probably going to lose that entire beard by the next episode.
Probably just falls off of his face or something.
The evolution of the beard continues with a little pointy goatee, mustache, and some stubble. Boimler didn't get a huge amount of screen time this week. It was very much focusing on, like you said, Mariner starting off by saying, I'm okay with enjoying missions and not bucking against the rules. And there was something like very cathartic about hearing that spoken out loud, because it's definitely been implied. But when you have a character spell it out and Tendi explain it as well, it's like, oh, this is the place that they want Mariner to be. Like, this is really solid. And even if something happens next week that shakes that, that's interesting to me, because it's like, okay, what's going to throw her back? As long as it's not some vague, well, I just don't want her. Like, it would have to be like an interesting event. But I like where she's at right now and where she's kind of putting her energy. Back. No, I don't think so either. But it would have to be something big to push her back, and that would be interesting if they did that big thing. But it's fun to see her continue to evolve through this season for me.
Yeah. For Boimler and Mariner in this episode, you're right. There was just definitely more of a Mariner episode. And the things we see of Boimler reminded me of what I enjoy about the humor element, because Boimler is still doing great. He does get to the point where he goes Zombo, so he's kind of like, you know, he's off the roster for being helpful in this episode. But getting stuck in a wetsuit and falling down, him going to the to work at the helm or whatever, and he's just nipples out, just stuff like that is so funny, because I remember watching the first episode of Lower Decks coming out of, I think, like Picard or Strange. Like, we were just watching some, like, the serious episodes, you know. And something about seeing the crew half still in their wetsuits, the floor is covered in water. And it just reminded me that there's a joy in how this is animated, that if you're watching it back to back, like we have been in Lower Decks for a long time, you kind of forget how bonkers it is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, on a serious ship in a serious show, you wouldn't see that. They would never put Captain Picard and Number One in a wetsuit.
I don't know. I mean, you know? Maybe Riker in early TNG, they would, because Riker was put into some ridiculous outfits. You know, the open chest V thing that he has when they visit the Lady Planet? Yeah, but you're right. They wouldn't put Picard in that crazy wetsuit.
No.
But I do love the wetsuits.
And then Wesley just front and center, just nipples out with half of his thing, you know, like half of his suit off, and Mariner, no, you know, there's just such a joy to how they present their story that is a delight.
No, and I agree. So that's what I did like
the Boimler and Mariner stuff, you know, in this episode. And really the crew was fun. I really actually enjoyed Captain Freeman in this episode too, which is kind of rarer for me.
No, mainly because like I believe her motivations and where she's at. Like, She's on mission, and then she realizes that she's so on mission that she's neglecting how fortunate she is on the Cerritos, and then sees some relation between them being second contact and Starbase 80 being forgotten, and then 100% committing to fixing Starbase 80. Like, that's very Freeman, is to realize that she's overstepped and then overstep even more, but in the direction of correcting her previous mistake. Like, she is 100% commitment in a character, even if that direction might be wrong sometimes.
She's like the definition of the pendulum swing.
Yeah. She is like, sometimes you just need a commander that says yes. And in that direction, like Picard does this. There's a great episode where Picard and Beverly are psychically linked and they're lost in a mountain. And Beverly looks at her tricorder and says, I'm not too sure which way to go. Picard looks at the tricorder and says, this way. And then she stops and says, you don't have a fucking clue. You don't know. You're just being confident. And Picard's just like, he knows that she's in his head. And he's just like, okay, sometimes as a captain, we have to pretend like we know what we're doing. And I'm like, you son of a bitch. I knew you were lying.
But that's true.
But that's true of command. Sometimes we need that confidence in order to function. But
well, that's what I'm saying is sometimes it's not knowing the, like, life is not the clear black and white. You 100% know all the time the right decision. You just have to get comfortable with going in a direction and trusting that you have the capability to handle whatever is ahead. But when you're in leadership and you're doing that, I think it's even more important at times to just say, we're going in this direction because that's the direction that we're going. There isn't necessarily a best answer. And you can spend so much time spinning your wheels figuring out which direction that is. And so it's
sometimes
fun.
Progress
to see.
Can be enough.
Yes. And in this case, you've got Captain Freeman, the final moment, she's, you know, running down this dark corridor into the mouth, the gaping maw of this, I don't know, very concerning sized bat, apparently.
Yes. I have questions about how big that bat is. Yeah. It won't even fit in the box. Not with that attitude, it won't.
Exactly. And that was so fun because she's clearly a bit delusional on her capabilities, but then you have Ransom really holding back, who is usually the one
the
that's more adventurous. Yes. Yeah. And so I enjoyed the role swapping of the writing choices in that moment where he's going, hey, I think we probably have reached our limit. And then she is showing us how Mariner kind of got her gusto as well, because she's doing a very Mariner thing. Mariner does it this episode as well when she decides to just attack the whale without a plan. I mean,
just get back into like some foundational Mariner act. Like, if all else fails, I'll go back
that's exactly it.
Yeah.
I don't have any other ideas. I guess I'll just turn back on my chaos mode and see if that helps anything. And it randomly does, but
more to that point, Ransom, if he was with his lower deckers, then I think he would be in the Freeman position of going after it. But because she's in command and is doing it, he's going to balance her. So
yes,
I like what they're doing with Ransom this season. He seems to be what the mission needs at every point, like a good first officer. So
yeah,
I would love to know how much of that was a deliberate in the writer's room. This is what we're going to do with Ransom this season, and how much I'm just reading too much into it, as I am.
I loved it. I hope that it's intentional, because I think I've seen enough. We've talked about this before, just like kind of a sprinkling of some consistency. Like when they sit down to write a character, they're said, they think this is how this character would approach this particular question. And yeah, and it runs through all of those filters. And I love that in this episode, you do have him making really interesting decisions, but then also you're just seeing him like just cover himself.
Well, let's talk about the goo. That's a nice transition into the references, unless there's anything plot-wise you want to dive into. It's kind of plot-free, this one.
I think it's great. Let's get into the references, because there's so many, and I actually got multiple of them.
Yeah,
so that was fun.
You did. Well, I want to hear the references that you got. First, we'll do the gel. Now, the gel is a piece of writing genius / cynicism / it probably doesn't age well now, but it comes from Enterprise, the prequel series, and during this time, they don't use transporters. They're technically safe for human use and biological use, but they don't trust them, and they don't have the same range, so they don't have the biofilters that filter out all of the alien diseases and whatnot. So this gel, whenever they come back from an away mission on a shuttle, they have to stay in the decontamination chamber and rub gel on themselves to get rid of all of the bugs. And of course, there are certain times where the gel is rubbed onto each other's bodies, and sometimes poignant conversations happen during the gel rubbing, and sometimes there might be two characters that have a will they won't they situation and have no choice but to rub this lubricant gel onto each other in a very sensual and sexual way.
This is an existing TV show, or is this fan fiction?
Nope, this ran 2001 to 2005. So this was legit Star Trek on TV. The ladies would be in their bras and their underwear. The men would be in very, very tight briefs. Package on show quite a lot. And yes, it was very, very sexualized. And it's hard to genuinely take that as this is a practical thing of the future. This is something that science dictates we need and is a natural evolution compared to a thing that makes for sexy TV.
This is that episode where it's time, this episode, you're going to like lather each other down in gel and have this awkward moment together.
It's hard to picture it as anything other than a sexy thing to put on TV. So that was, again, very on brand for Lower Decks to bring that up and to like rebrand it a little. It didn't really get rebranded at all, actually. It was just reintroduced. And Mariner's like, hey, there's probably a good reason why we don't do this anymore.
So that's why she says, or he says, and like, hey, what does he call her? Mare Bear?
Oh, Mare, yeah. Can you rub my back?
Can you get my back?
Yes.
Yeah. So because there's the rubbing. Okay.
No, that was sense. Like a line in the sand of if there is anyone shipping Boimler and Mariner, stop it. There shouldn't be, because there hasn't really been a hint of that. But stop it. Like, that's not where they're at. And I love that Rutherford is the one that's applying it to Boimler. It's so, I mean, they don't even take the opportunity of having Rutherford and Tendi rub it on each other.
No.
Like, they don't even do that, which is absolute. That would be what happened in Enterprise. There would already be a scene of Rutherford and Tendi in the decontamination chamber rubbing each other with the gel. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, there's one reference.
There's one of them. That leads us on to what are the references that you saw? I'm so excited. What did
you
find?
So many.
Do it. Tell us.
That's part of the delight of the Starbase, is seeing a lot of the old tech.
Yes.
And because we've watched a lot of TOS, I heard TOS sounds like when Tendi walks over to the wall and she's like, oh, it's a wall communicator. And she pushes the button and then it has the boop, boop, boop.
The whistle.
Yeah, that's it. They had the woo. And then she's like giddy. She's like, yee, you know, and she's just super happy. A lot of the panels of the... It seemed like every time we had a room, it just had a very familiar old panel set up. There was like a little bit of a TNG feel whenever they were talking to the engineer. When they went into the warp room and everything was upside down on the ceiling, some of those sections looked very Strange New Worlds /TOS.
It looks much more like the Strange New Worlds engine room than it does the Kirk TOS engine room, because the TOS engine room is very basic. You don't see much.
Yes.
And Strange New Worlds is a bit more open.
Yeah. And so it just reminded me of that, which, by the way, I love the humor beat whenever it fell from the ceiling to the floor. Oh, that was really funny.
That's what I mean about comedic timing. Okay. Everyone's back on the, oh shit. No, there's a console that was up there as well.
And then of course the lift. Because we've had the conversations about the lift before, and I think there was a joke about it in Strange New Worlds or something.
Deep Space Nine. So this is when the crew of Deep Space Nine go back in time and they go on board the Enterprise.
That's it.
And Sisko is just like giving
for the Tribble episode.
Yeah, that's it, the Trials and Tribulations. And Sisko is like giving a command to go to the bridge. No, or is it? It might be, it's O'Brien and Bashir, I think. And they're just like, oh, I think it's not voice, like, is it not voice activated? Is it not working? And an Enterprise crew member comes on and activates the thing. And O'Brien's like, I won't tell anyone if you don't tell anyone.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was very much that.
Yes.
But in this one, they turn it, they turn the thing and then they give the command. And it was really, it was really funny, because as soon as the lift opened up, I was like, handles!
Handles, I know these handles. But
because we had to talk about it, I was confused, I think, when we watched Deep Space Nine, and then we ended up watching TOS, and then I saw the handles in TOS. They had to hold on to them while they were, and the big joke was like, well, why are we holding on to it? Are we going to fall? And what's happening?
Yeah,
so in this one, it was really interesting. Yeah, because you have to like activate it by turning it or something like that.
Yeah.
But I know I'm missing a lot of other things, but there was a, like Turbo, what was it? There was something about where they were going arcade and then the computer was talking back to them. I didn't know if that was a reference, like in TOS, if you had to say two words to activate it or something like that.
That was literally the computer malfunctioning and like fucking with them and sending them to the wrong place. Or it could have been the engineer deliberately diverting them to a place that he knew needed some
more assistance.
Yeah, that's what I got from that.
I'm probably missing many other things.
But I'm super impressed. Like that was without being patronizing. You picked up some great references there, Danae. Well done, Ambassador.
Thank you so much.
Is working. She's getting exposed. She's seeing the references. There were plenty. One of my favorites was the uniform shop walked past the uniform vendor. I was just, it's only on there for a couple of frames, but I was like, there's one from the motion picture. There's the Monster Maroon. There's another. And it's just racks and racks of the original series era of uniforms as well. It was limited to TOS and the movies. Yeah.
I did see a lot of very familiar uniforms that were kind of, and it reminded me of, Camden Yard?
Yeah, Camden Market. Yeah.
Camden Market, because it had that same kind of vibe where there's just all this vintage stuff that they've repurposed.
Very, very similar. Yeah, that has the kind of grungy vibe of Camden Market. I kind of love it. Yeah, I would walk around there all day long. What other references did we have? Okay, so the engineer himself is pretty much a Trip Tucker homage, who he's the chief engineer on Enterprise in the show Enterprise, and he's this, like, you know, like how Scotty was Scottish, obviously Enterprise's equivalent was to make him like a yeehaw Texas cowboy. So you don't often get really thick regional accents in Star Trek, because I think in the future Gene was very much every accent has kind of unified a little bit, Scotty being the exception. I guess the original series was the exception, because you had Chekhov that was very Russian and Scotty that was very Scottish. But by TNG, everything's kind of unified. But on Enterprise, Trip was as Southern as it gets. He would like use analogies and be like, well, yeehaw, saddle up, and just very, very thick Texas accent. And this guy obviously had a very thick Southern accent as well. So I think it's just like he's in the Enterprise uniform. He's an engineer, therefore he must be Southern.
That's interesting, because we had that British guy in this one. What did you think of him, the doctor?
Oh, it was so funny. He was such a
chip chip tip top
chip, 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 chip. He was such a Bashir reference, just having the British guy. He made me laugh so much. And he in and of himself is a reference as well, because he's like half black and blue with like the blue lines all over him. That's a reference to Identity Crisis, and Geordi is getting turned into that blue creature gradually. There's an away mission he was on years and years and years earlier, and each member is being turned into one of those aliens, and he has to figure out why before it's too late. So a one episode reference. I love that. When I saw the half, I was like, wait, that's not an Identity Crisis reference. It can't be. Yep, of course it is. Of course it is, because that's what Lower Decks does. I think that's all that I had. Oh, the Akamarians. The Akamarians would be the other big reference. They're the 80s knifing gang that are in control of half of the space station. Again, that's a one episode of TNG reference from the Vengeance Factor. And literally, they go to a planet for like some peace talks. They get ambushed. But it's like this 80s biker gang with knives. And it's just, it's a super duper like Warriors ripoff. You know, the movie Warriors? It's kind of like that kind of vibe. And the crew of the Enterprise has to work out this murder mystery that's happening between these two warring clans and broker peace between them and whatnot. And yeah, that's the only time the Akamarians are mentioned, until Lower Decks decides to bring them back from the dead and put them on a starbase. And yeah, other than Elorians, which we've mentioned, I think that's everything. But yeah, love the old TOS comm panels. I love seeing the old TOS tech. Nox had a TOS phaser that she zapped a zombie with as well. Love seeing the retro technology. One final question I had, the score. I really liked the score for this episode. And it was very spooky. And I'm confused why this episode wasn't like episode 3 or something, because it was a very like Halloween feeling episode. And I think it's because they wanted more Starbase 80 references before we got here. But this feels like a perfect Halloween episode.
I think it would have been a really great Halloween episode if they had kind of been able to line it up. Maybe they just didn't think about that particular part, but there's a spooky side to it for sure. The music has got that kind of daunting feel, but then you have a lot of nostalgic sounds from different eras that are being used. I love the music that all Star Trek, I get chills listening to the intro music. In fact, we skip the intro music to consume the show before we go live. But then as we're gearing up to launch our yes. live show, we listen to the music.
Because it's in the credits.
I just love it. Yeah. I love listening to the music. So yeah, I think that the score is always really nice. Yeah,
it's always great. Well, before we do some sins, how many pips is the name of this round?
Four pips.
Four pips. Wow. Yeah, I'm giving it three. And I think it's because I'm a tough judge, because a four pipper needs some deep, deep character work dialogue as well as a lot of fun. And this had a lot of fun. But it was super entertaining for me, so I'm giving it
three. So Mariner's character conversations weren't enough for you.
Nope. And that should not be a surprise.
Interesting.
I'll give it 3.5 because it's pretty close. I'll give it 3.5 pips. It's Commander with a bit extra. This pip system is completely broken. I love it.
We have the most fucked up pip system ever. We really created.
Do. People hate that we have 3.5 pips. It's amazing. It's amazing. With that, let's head over to engineering for some sins. Battle stations, everyone.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm. This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, would you like to go first? Did you have anything this week?
I really didn't have very much this week. I think, like, for me, the biggest sin is how quickly Mariner shifts over into her, you know. Starbase 80 is amazing. Yes. Like, that just felt a bit forced to me. It's just hard for me to kind of see that. But when I add in the previous episodes of her behavior, I do think that she has been on a really deep story arc of changing. And this episode is meant to tip that over into she is solidly becoming somebody who is for missions and she's for change. And so I think I kind of land in the middle for me, but it felt forced in the moment.
Yeah. Once the story is done with that part of the story, it's really done with it. It's like, okay, she's fine. Let's move on.
The other sin that I wrote down, I'll just go through both of mine and then you can do some of yours and I'll go into the chat, see what we got there. But is that the food replicators are not working, but then we have vendors. And I just don't, if they don't get regular food supply, yeah. I don't understand how food vendors would work.
And how are they getting their supplies?
Yeah, I think the joke is that hot dogs are just made out of, yeah, like they're like at the Twinkie of yeah. meat.
They will never, ever expire.
But, and they even reference that the other food has expired. And, you know, I think we're even meant to believe that maybe the food is what is contaminated for a brief moment there. But I am confused about how their ecosystem, their world works if they don't have access to the replicators that we see everywhere else. And I have a hard time understanding how the Federation would, how they're able to ignore Starbase 80 like that. And again, that's the joke. The joke is that this is, they don't care about this one in particular.
Why even have it? Just decommission it. Like, what is it doing if you're not going to service it?
So I'm confused about that. I think I almost if I think about it too much, it kind of makes me mad. Like, for the joke, we have food vendors and we have a food court. And I love that. I love having a food court and I love having an old rundown food court. That's a fun place to see all the arcades and the lights and everything like that. It's, you know, very much reminds me of 1990s mall or something like that. But I don't know. Sometimes I think the show's jokes go a little bit too far. And I realize how stupid that sounds because this is a made up universe and they can do whatever they want.
We've mentioned this before because one of the beauties of Star Trek and why it endures for so long and endears is that it's a vision of the future that's believable. Like, I can imagine living on the Enterprise and have often dreamed of doing so. So when Lower Decks can sometimes push reality beyond what is really quote unquote believable or like takes it that hard to describe step too far, it does kind of take you out of it. So yeah, I get it. Like, it's hard to see a station be so neglected when it must have some resources. It must get something. Like, it's criminal to not even give them a shipment of like stationery. Like, they literally don't have anything. And that seems weird in Starfleet, which is supposed to be like a utopia mm-hmm. that has replicators that can do whatever you want. And like, these people are basically on rations. Like, they're living worse than Voyager is living better than they are. And Voyager's 80,000 light years away.
Yeah. I'm going to take all the sins. I just remember another one that I hate I forget it is at the end, this works element of how everything wraps up.
Bonk on the head.
Yeah. just that the entire success of their mission is entirely dependent on just accident after accident after stupid choice after we're just going to put this thing in a bucket. And then it just so happens that a smack to the beluga coughs out this entity in beluga saliva and then it goes into a bucket. I'm okay with it because there comes a tipping point for my interest and I wanted the show to end, so I'm okay with it. But that was maybe the other one.
No, I get it. Like, there was a little bit of me that was like, oh, I'm glad we're not spending too long on the resolution. But there's a bigger part of me that's like, what happened to science? Like, can we not just science the shit out of it? And I know the joke is that they're just like, oh, doctor, how did you manage to do that? And he's like, complicated doctor things, when he knows how dumb his luck is, that hitting the whale on the head worked so perfectly.
Maybe that's part of the point. Sometimes the captain just has to decide to go left or right and there's no right choice. Exactly. Sometimes you just accidentally save the day because you decide to beat a whale about the head. I don't know.
Not a euphemism.
But I didn't like it.
So my biggest sin was, and this is a space thing and shows misunderestimating how big space is sometimes. The Cerritos drops out of warp. And navigation is out of the question, but Starbase 80 is close enough. And they're just like, no, our only other option is to spend 400 years traveling to this other Starbase. Now, by that logic, what if Starbase 80 hadn't been there? Is that your only option? Like, the fact that you dropped out of warp anywhere near anything is incredible, unless there's something tied into the ship that's like, okay, we'll drop out of warp. Like, there's a protocol where you have to drop out of warp near something, but that doesn't make sense because this was definitely an emergency. So yeah, you need to be that close for the story, but space is so big, you're much more likely to be near nothing than you are something. And they, like, if they really, really didn't want to go to Starbase 80, the only other option can't be traveling at impulse for 400 years. Like, you still have emergency communications, like the shuttles are warp capable, for example, but I guess they wouldn't have navigation either. But you could still ask for help. You could send a distress call. Like, Starbase 80 wasn't really the only option, was my biggest sin, but I get it. My next one was how quickly Rutherford and everyone just dismisses the groaning from Billups. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but like, you err on the side of caution. Like, yes, it could be breakfast. It could be an upset stomach. It could be he stubbed his toe. But you know what doesn't hurt? Confirming that. It doesn't hurt to do a wellness call and be like, hey, Billups made a noise. Can we check on that? Because shit kind of happens in space, but they are very quick to dismiss it.
Then they get over there and yes, it's funny, but there's like a what's it called? When it's all going to blow up and there's a countdown and then...
The self-destruct?
Yeah, that's it. They had the self-destruct thing going on and then it turns off. That was really funny.
That quote, I knew it was coming and I still laughed. She was like, self-destruct aborted. Self-destruct activated. No!
Yeah, and then they're going again. But yeah, somebody should check on Billups. The sin is always not checking on Billups.
Yeah, the sin, as always, is check on Billups. He needs it. He needs emotional and physical support. On the distress call, on the self-destruct thing, should not be that easy to set the self-destruct. I thought maybe the anaphasic sex alien was doing it on purpose. No, it was literally because Billups or whoever was licking the console and that turns on the self-destruct. That shouldn't... Nope.
Yeah.
That's not how that works at all. Nope. Also, no. Mariner isn't even qualified to turn it off. You need to be a senior rank. You need to be... In fact, in most cases, you need at least 2, sometimes 3 codes to activate the self-destruct and you need at least 2 to turn it off again. Because once you've turned it on, it's probably for a good reason. It shouldn't be that easy to turn on and off the self-destruct. For the sake of the B plot, it's very convenient that Ransom and Freeman never used their comm badges once.
What?
If they'd used their comm badges, there's no B plot anymore because they're on their own. And if they use their comm badge at any point, they get zombified and you have no B plot. So they have to not use their comm badges.
Oh, Marin, you mean Freeman and...
Freeman and Ransom. What did I say?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear the first part of
that. Oh, okay. Yeah, Freeman and Ransom. Like, yeah, there is no B-plot if they use their comm badges.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. With the... I don't know if I missed this, but why couldn't they use the Cerritos transporters to get over there?
Like, I don't know. I don't know
Starbase
if
Starbase 80 can't, but I don't know why Cerritos can't. And I wonder if I missed that.
I don't know. I'm at this point maybe like you. Jaded about the whole transporter thing. It literally is a transporters won't transport cliche.
Yeah. And it is one of my favorite things in Star Trek that never should have been invented plot wise. Like, if you have to find a way to turn them off so often, they never should have been introduced. And do you know, I'm such a fucking nerd. Do you know why they were introduced to begin with? It's transporters, like functionally for TOS, why they were a thing.
Something related to sex?
I mean, that would make sense with Gene, but no, there was a production reason for it.
Somebody wanted to use glitter?
Yes, that was it. Yeah, that was it. They had a lot of leftover glitter from the 50s that they just needed to use. Yeah.
Really?
No, not really, no. It was cheaper. It was too expensive. You believe? Oh, I'm so sorry. You believed me.
I did. There was so much glitter.
No, it was cheaper.
Of glitter and gel, and then you mix them together, and all of a sudden you have,
You have transporter effects. No, it was because it was too expensive to land the Enterprise each time. So if they wanted to visit an alien ship, they needed a way to get the crew onto the ship, and landing the model of the Enterprise was prohibitively expensive, special effects
wise. I'm so impressed with the chat. Everybody got that one
right. Well done, chat.
Wow, chat.
Nice.
Amazing.
All about, I mean, if in doubt, it's money when it comes to, if a story thing has been invented, it's most likely money.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It would also look terrible. What a great accidental perfect, like, I love transporting. Yeah, the transporter is so great.
It's so iconic. You have that noise, and then they just decided to go whole hog with, like, the transporter noise and the effects. Like, they could have just done snap a finger and then they suddenly appear. Step into this, step out. But you've got, like, it's its own musical thing, and visually it's... Blah, blah, blah. So freaking good. So good. So good. My last one, and I mean, there's so many, but my last one that I'll mention is that the zombies conveniently and dramatically reveal themselves. Like, they sprinkle to begin with, and then suddenly it's a zombie horde all at once. Once they're at the point of, oh, no, something is definitely happening here, then it's the horde of zombies. The zombies are perfectly dramatically timed with the reveal of there are zombies.
But the reveal of the zombie is so funny when that door opens and then they walk in and then they fall. It was really good.
Oh, it's so...
I guess RIP that guy.
I love... Yeah, he's 100% dead. So this is when they leave the engine room and there's like 3 zombies in the little tunnel thing that they took. And obviously they've taken the grab rail to get down, but this zombie just walks out and hits the deck so hard. I laughed so loud. Just that, again, that physical comedy and timing just got me. But yeah, that guy died. He died so much. Well, with that, that's all that I had. Really liked that episode. It was perfect mid-season episode, I think. Next week's episode is called Of Gods and Angles. And I had to read that twice. It's definitely angles. So yeah, super quickly, what's happening next week in Of Gods and Angles?
A math equation is going to be important.
Yeah, that's where I'm going as well. A god will try and take over a planet and they will use math to communicate with the god and stop them because math.
Like a Q-bert episode. Just like this. Yeah.
Q. Yeah.
I'm thinking Q related.
I think that's what it is. Well, if you have any more predictions for the rest of the show or anything you want to share with us, please send us a lovely, or not, send us a horrible message by email to captainspod at cinemasins.com. You can also join us on our lovely Discord channel on the CinemaSins Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, where the sausage lives long and sausage. The sausage quotes and titles are still continuing. I think we're at least 10 days into this, and I love it so, so much. But yeah, until then, I'm Captain Ian, and can science explain Q? Probably.
And I'm Ambassador Danae, and haha, my glutes, the power of...
Wait, what? Oh shit, something just beamed the ambassador off the bridge. Computer, red alert, shields up! Computer, fire at will! Damn it, ambassador, did you provoke the Borg? Sorry, everyone. We'll find a way to get the ambassador back, but it's going to have to wait. Our rescue mission gear doesn't arrive until Tuesday. Computer, get us out of here!
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Bing, 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 bing.
Bum, 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 bum. This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind each other that, no, that's not how I do that intro at all. I got put off because I didn't say battle stations, everyone, so I'm going to go back and do that.
Can we talk about a couple of interesting things that popped up in the chat, too, just really quickly? I really wanted to... This one's interesting. The sound effects of TOS transporters actually are music.
Oh, that's amazing.
They were composed and recorded by an orchestra. That's a fact from David Ellis.
That makes sense because it had to be. Like, they didn't have the, let's go to a sound effects board and do zip zappy zoop zoops. Like, they had proper music and Foley artists. Like, the TARDIS, you know, like when the, I don't know if you know this, but when the TARDIS takes off, there's that whining sound that... the like grinding sound that it makes as the TARDIS disappears.
I've never watched the show. I'm sorry.
But anyway, they make that noise by, they opened up a piano, got a sheet of metal, and then scraped the sheet of metal against the piano strings. And I was like, yep, that's the sound of our spaceship.
Fun story. There's a guy that back in my church going days when I was a little kid, I went to this church that had like the full choir in the front every single Sunday. And there was this guy that would sit on the front pew and he would bring a saw, like a handsaw, like the real long ones, with like the big long, like warbly metal.
Yeah.
With all of the teeth off of it.
Okay. Yeah.
And a bow from a violin. And he plonked the he would hold on to like the saw handle with his left hand. And then he would like hold the other end of the saw between his legs. Wow. And then with his other hand, he would like use the bow along the metal and warble it.
That's crazy. That must have made an insane sound.
So then we have like the all hail God. And then like this little, here's the sound it make.
It was just crazy sound. That's amazing. How do you keep a straight face? That kind of sounds like the TOS theme. Ooh. Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
I appreciate that you didn't go for the high note there.
That's blown away.
I'm watching this show called The Summit. It's like a new reality TV show competition where a group of just regular people are sent to New Zealand, and they get there and they're told, I think, to start off is that they're going to be competing for money. And so they get there and they're told, okay, so to get this $1 million, you have to climb that mountain. And like, none of them are mountain climbers.
Oh no.
They're just like a mom.
Oh no.
Each person is carrying part of the $1 million in their backpack. So if somebody quits, the money goes with them.
Oh, so you're not going to win $1 million if you get to the top then. You win whatever's in your bag.
You win what is able to be won, yes, yeah. Carried up the mountain.
That's
yes.
A crock of nonsense.
So
I'll just leave with the backpack then.
I mean, you can't. That's not the rules
not
at all.
That attitude.
In the most recent episode, they have reached this particular point. Oh, by the way, like several of them super afraid of heights, and they didn't know they were going to have to climb a mountain. So they're just like, oh,
that's,
fuck.
That's not fair.
Just a reminder, this is an R-rated show. Yeah. And so they get to, so in today's episode, they have to, like, there's been many challenges where they have to face their fear of heights in various ways, but they're usually harnessed to something. They have to crawl across or walk across or build a bridge as they go, these kinds of things. But today's, the one that I watched today, was literally hold on to a rope that has a little bit of a knot at the bottom of it and last across a zip line. Holding, just you have to hold on. Now, of course, they are harnessed, so they can't actually fall to their deaths. There's safety involved, but if they let go, there's a consequence for it. So the goal is to just hang on, and everyone's like, "Who's going to go first?" Because it's kind of like a steep drop when you get started. Yeah, you just don't want to be the first person. No. I don't want to be the first person in that situation. I also don't want to be the first person in a haunted house.
Yeah, you don't want to test that stuff out. You want to make sure, like, just it's like knowing you can complete a hard level of a video game. Once you've done it that first time, it's a lot easier. You just want to know nobody dies when they go through it. The problem with transporters is that you probably might be the third person to go through and still die.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not bad. It's interesting. It's different because it's a brand new reality competition. You're watching the people figure out how to play the game.
Mm.
And the people who are playing the game are very familiar with reality competition shows like The Challenge or Survivor or these other shows. So they're going in with some sense of strategy, but no one's ever played this game before. So it's really kind of interesting in that way.
You can't really metagame it like you can Survivor. Survivor is so fascinating in the fact that now it's such a meta game because everyone who goes in it has heard of Survivor and is like, well, this is this era of Survivor and this is this era of Survivor. And the eras change based on how people try and fudge the rules. It's fascinating.
This is reminding me of an actual reality TV show called Skin Wars.
Okay. No, this is a new one to me.
It is on the rank of reality competitions. It's one you only watch just to out of just curiosity more than substance.
Interesting. Much like Enterprise.
So in this show, they decide that reality competition needs to go into the not very popular world of body painting.
Okay. I mean, I've heard that some people will go to like parties and clubs in body paint in place of clothing. Yeah.
So they bring people in who know how to do body painting and they line out the competition. The show is hosted by, what's her name? She was
one of the aliens from Avatar.
Let me look up her name. Because it's great. What is her name? Wait, Rebecca Romijn? Yes, because she was like
number one
Mystique.
From Strange New Worlds. Yeah, so she was Mystique, and she's also number one in Strange New Worlds.
Okay. Yes.
Una.
So I guess that's the connection
that's
to Star Trek.
That's okay, how we we're got on into track. Star Trek. We're totally deliberate. Back to some Star Trek. Sin removal from David Ellis. Starbase 80's design is roughly based on the design of Starfleet headquarters in the 1970s technical manual, which is in keeping with its TOS interiors. Love that. Love that. David said, I need an Enterprise uniform. Well, no, nobody needs five different uniforms, and I would sin David for that. Yes, you do need five different uniforms. I think I have... Wait, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think I'm at 6. I think I have 6 uniforms. Oh, 7 if you include Q's uniform. But that's not
do
a
you
uniform.
And pajamas. Do you have pajamas?
I don't count pajamas. Okay. For legit uniforms. Come on, Danae. What are you talking about? Oh, 7. Okay. No, because I have the TNG dress uniform, the white one.
Of course you do.
So yeah, it's 7. At least 7. There is a point that I wanted to make, but it's a sin that would get cut from any imaginary script we were writing, and it's how do they have the Enterprise uniforms? Because that predates TOS by 80 to 100 years. So I'm kind of like, you would have to have them... That predates the building of this starbase, so you would have to have them specially shipped, unless back in like TOS days, they didn't even get the TOS uniforms. They're like, here, have this old stuff. And they've been handed down for 200 years. Like, there's a point where the jumpsuits, I don't understand how you still have them lying around because they're so old.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How big do you think Starbase 80 is?
I would guess it's the size of,
Tulsa.
No, Jesus Christ. David says, Starbase 80 has been around since the TOS era, Does that mean Starbase 1 to 79 have also not been remodeled since the 2260s, or is Starfleet just a dick to Starbase 80? I think Starbase 1 to 79 are closer. So I think Starbase 80 is so far away that it gets neglected and the others are closer. But who knows, maybe 79 is neglected too.
I didn't do it.
You did. I saw you do it. I've got it on camera.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra, not available on third-party ordering platforms.